You fill in the blank with the first thing you think of. Noah and the... Daniel and the... David and... Adam and... Cain and... Ahithophel and... Ahithophel and... Yeah, I have no idea either. I just wanted to say it. Jonah and... Jonah needed an ark, but most people usually say the whale. And see, one problem is that the Bible never says whale, it says fish. But the real problem is that the fish isn't really the hard part of the story to believe. Let me show you. Jonah chapter 2, verse 10 says, "And the Lord commanded the fish, and it vomited Jonah onto dry land." Verse chapter 3, verse 1 says, "Then the word of the Lord came to Jonah a second time, 'Go to the great city of Nineveh and proclaim to it the message I give you.' Jonah obeyed the word of the Lord and went to Nineveh." In church words, what Jonah did here was repent. He changed his mind and he took steps in a new direction. If you think about what Jonah's just been through, it is fairly obvious why he repented. Chapter 1:1 started out, "The word of the Lord came to Jonah, son of Amittai, 'Go to the great city of Nineveh and preach against it, because its wickedness has come up before me.'" But Jonah didn't want to do that. Jonah didn't want to go help no stinking Ninevites. So he took a boat going in exactly the wrong direction of Nineveh by 3,000 miles. They're sailing along fine until they hit the perfect storm. And then Jonah gets tossed overboard. Thinking he's about to die, Jonah begs God for help, which God sends. Now, the help came in a form that made Jonah wet himself, but that didn't matter in as much as Jonah was drowning at the time. And then he had to live inside a fish for 3 days and three nights before he got puked up on the land. And that's why lying on the beach where this all started, covered in fish, baba, probably with a sign over his head that said Nineveh, 600 miles that way, Jonah is happy to do whatever God tells him to do. Sometimes things in life cause us to rethink life. Did you hear about James Babcock, Beaver, Pennsylvania? He's a 38-year-old guy who decided to burgle a house one night. So he broke into the shed by putting his fist through the window in the door. He's barely begun burgling and he's bleeding badly. Then he broke into the storage space over the garage since there was nothing in the shed, but in the pitch blackness, he fell through a hole in the storage space, landing hard on the first floor below, so now he's bruised and bleeding. You know those old-fashioned grease pits where there's like a rectangular pit in the ground that you can stand in and work under your car? Well, this garage had one, and Mr. Babcock fell into it, cracking his head open. Now he's really bleeding. He climbs out of the hole. He staggers out of the garage over to the house. He breaks another window to get inside. He promptly falls down the cellar stairs. Whereupon, Mr. Babcock decides this is not a robbery that's meant to be, so he leaves. He goes back to his car and realizes he's lost his keys. But rather than go get them, he starts the car rolling. He thinks he can jump start his car, but the steering wheel without the key won't turn, and he hits a tree hard. So he climbs out of his car. He goes back to the garage to find his keys. Sure enough, in the garage, he falls into the grease pit again. So he gives up on the keys. He goes back to the car, which, without thinking, when he got out of the car the first time, he had locked after crashing into the tree. He locked his car, so he has to smash his car window to get back into it. Trying to get the car into neutral, he breaks the gear shift. Then he somehow pushes the car back up the road. I don't know why. He got back in and launched the car again. The steering wheel is still locked. It hit a different tree this time. And that's where the police found him. Head on the horn, bleeding profusely, unconscious. Having stolen nothing, he pled guilty to criminal mischief, and the judge sentenced him to only probation. Quote, "Mr. Babcock has suffered enough." Jonah, face down in the sand and whale vomit, same. He has suffered enough. At this point in the story, whatever God says, wherever God sends, Jonah's going to say, "Yes, sir, I'm on it." Jonah hears God's voice for the second time, and this time, Jonah says, "I'm on my way." He repented. The Greek word is metanoeo. It's like metamorphosis, where you change your shape. Metanoeo is where you change your mind. Have you ever gone through some stuff that was so bad that when you came out the other side, you said, never again, not like that? In Jonah 3, verse 3, it says, Jonah obeyed the word of the Lord and went to Nineveh. Now, Nineveh was a very large city. It took 3 days to go through it. Jonah began by going a day's journey into the city, proclaiming, 40 more days and Nineveh will be overthrown. Most people can walk about 20 miles in a day. Nineveh was a 3-day walk. If you do the math, that means it was a very big city. The biggest city and landmass in the contiguous U.S. is Jacksonville, Florida, which is a 3-day walk, were you to walk it north to south. Nineveh was a big, big city. In fact, it was the biggest city. It was the leading city in the world right then and for about 50 years. And here comes Jonah from 600 miles away from a country that could fit inside the borders of this city. And Jonah's supposed to tell them that God's not good with their violent ways and they need to change? How's that going to go? Let's send Adam Grandusky to New York City to tell them they need to stop all that. Let's send Autumn to Las Vegas with a message from heaven that they should not bet against. Let's send me to Waikiki for worth a try. I don't know, just trying. God asked Jonah to be a prophet. Usually we think of prophets as guys who predict the future, but the word actually means someone who speaks for another. God asked Jonah to be his messenger. Our Willowbrook kids' classes are good. Teaching kids to know the Bible matters. I once thanked a teacher for volunteering to teach 5- and 6-year-olds, and she said, oh, it's a pleasure. She said, especially like last week when we were reviewing from the weeks before, and I asked, who remembers what we've been learning about the past 2 weeks? And she said, they all yelled out in unison, Elijah. And then I said, and who was Elijah? And they all yelled out, a prophet. And then I said, what's a prophet? And it got really quiet, real, real quiet. Until she said, my quietest kiddo's eyes got big and he shouted out, a truth teller. And he was so proud that he remembered. And the teacher said, that makes it absolutely a pleasure to teach. A truth teller. Prophets sometimes do tell what's going to happen in the future, but only because they tell the truth. So Jonah walks into the middle of the biggest city in the world and he tells them the truth. Jonah says, God is going to wipe you out in 40 days because you're not living like he likes. Jonah's not really predicting the future with a crystal ball here. He's just saying what God said is going to happen. God wanted Nineveh to know what was coming their way. And since Jonah has decided to do what God tells him to, he is there warning the people of Nineveh. Jonah is a prophet, a truth teller. But what are the chances they're going to listen to the truth? I mean, really. The job God assigns Jonah seems to me pretty undoable. But there's Jonah standing in Times Square with a sign that says, you've got less than 6 weeks, turn or burn. Fat chance that's going to work, right? Aren't there times in your life when you look around and you just know that the people that you're with are not interested in anything having to do with God? Haven't you been in places where you look around and you say, nobody in this room is going to make it? I mean, hopefully not sitting here, but in some places, you feel like it's an away game, right? Like you're on almost enemy territory, like no one there has any connection whatsoever to having anything to do with Jesus, nor do they want to. They give that, don't be bringing that stuff up around here kind of vibe. That was Nineveh. What are the chances that Jonah's just going to walk in and make a dent in that? Jonah 3, verse 6 says, when Jonah's warning reached the king of Nineveh, he rose from his throne, took off his royal robes, covered himself with sackcloth, and sat down in the dust. This is the proclamation the king issued in Nineveh. By decree of the king and his nobles, don't let people or animals, herds or flocks taste anything. Don't let them eat or drink, but let the people and the animals be covered with sackcloth. Let everyone call urgently on God. Let them give up their evil ways and their violence. Who knows? God may yet relent and with compassion turn from his fierce anger so that we won't perish. They repented. They changed their minds. They took steps in a new direction. Jonah walks in and he says, you people really need to change now. And the whole city said, okay. Suppose we were to send Jason to Kabul, Afghanistan, and his job is to get all of the people there to forsake Muhammad and follow Jesus. Now, I admit, Jason is persuasive, but who thinks that he's going to convince a city of 5 million people? But he flies over, he lands, he gets out, he walks to the middle of the town, and he starts talking. And everyone says, wow, Jason, you're right. We're wrong. What prohibits us from being baptized? And suddenly Kabul becomes the largest Christian city in the Middle East. Does that seem likely to you? Does that seem even remotely possible to you? No, right? But that's what happened when Jonah warned Nineveh that God was going to destroy them. A storm that threatened to sink a ship following a man being thrown overboard into the sea, down into the sea. A fish coming along and swallowing whole the aforementioned man before he drowns. Said man somehow surviving in that fish as it cruised through the Mediterranean Sea for 3 days and three nights. Said fish tossing its cookies and coughing up its profit onto a beach somewhere. I have no problem believing any of those things are for real. I think miracles are cool and very possible if you start with a God who made everything. But a whole nation changing course because of a sermon? For me, that's hard to swallow. Verse 5, the Ninevites believed God. A fast was proclaimed, and all of them, from the greatest to the least, put on sackcloth. Really? So as I figure, there are two probable reasons that Nineveh listened and responded to the prophet's warnings. It could have been because of Jonah, or it could have been because of Nineveh. It might have been, they might have responded, they might have repented because of Jonah. His life might have held some credibility with them. How? Well, he had not done what God said, like they were not doing what God said, and he had paid for it. He was a cautionary tale to the whole city. Did you hear about the State Department of Fishing and Games in California? They sent out a warning recently for hikers, hunters, and fishermen. The warning from the California State Department of Fishing and Game said, take extra precautions regarding bear activity while in Yosemite. We advise people to wear noise-producing devices like little bells on their clothing that will alert but not startle bears if you approach them unexpectedly. We also advise carrying pepper spray in case you encounter a bear. They said, it is a good idea to watch for fresh bear activity and know the difference between black bear and grizzly bear droppings. They said black bear droppings are smaller and contain berries and squirrel fur. Grizzly bear droppings often have little bells in them and smell like pepper spray. Sometimes there are clues in other people's lives for us to learn from, right? I think when Jonah walked into Nineveh, the people noticed him. I think he was remarkable, as in they remarked about him. After all, he had recently lived inside of a fish for 3 days and three nights. He spent 3 days in fish fluids. What do you think that did to Jonah? Did you ever think, what did that do to his skin? Is it not possible that that gastric stuff inside the fish blanched his skin so that he came out with no color at all? Or maybe it splotched his skin? Might Jonah's hair have come out purple or green or sticking straight up or gone? Isn't it probable that Jonah came out looking like an 8th century Lyle Lovett or Dennis Rodman? When a guy like that shows up, even in Nineveh, would he not draw a crowd? Sometimes we listen to people talk because it's obvious they have something to say. Have you heard of Nick Vujicic? Nick was born December 4th, 1982, with no arms and no legs. That was tough growing up. No arms and no legs. But eventually Nick came to terms with his situation, and now he is a motivational speaker. He has spoken in over 3,000 times in over 57 countries on 5 different continents. He has attracted audiences of up to 110,000 people at a time. He has met with government leaders around the world, including the president of Singapore, Uruguay, and Taiwan. His advice, Nick's advice to people, he stands there with no arms and no legs. his advice to people is to understand that they are much loved by God and they should give thanks and be willing to serve others. And Nick is so unusual that people listen attentively to whatever he says. Jonah, I think, when he walked in, was unusual. So the Ninevites gave him a hearing and believed him. Why did the whole city buy in? It might have been because of Jonah, or it might have been because of them. Nineveh might have gotten to such a low point that they were ready for change. It might not have been Jonah at all. It might have been the circumstances before he got there. Paul Harvey used to talk about a stomach turning point in a nation's history. He said groups of people that live together tend to get worse and worse and worse. It's just the way we go. But sometimes something will happen so gross, so vile, it will make people sick to their stomachs. And sometimes that will cause people as a group to change their minds and take steps in new directions. Like he said on the Selma Bridge, when the police used tear gas and billy clubs on civil rights protesters. When America saw that happen, it was just too wrong to let things continue like that. Like Paul Harvey said, when Reginald Denny got dragged out of the truck during the LA riots and they bashed his head with a brick, that was too much for our country to stand. Perhaps maybe when a policeman kneels down on another man's neck until he dies, that is a stomach turning point. Perhaps when Americans and SIV holders are left behind in a country where they're sure to be killed, that is a stomach turning point. Perhaps when our government decides to print up extra trillions of dollars to flood our economy. Do you know how much $1 trillion is? $1 trillion. If I had $1 million, I'd be rich. There's a song like that. If I had $1 million and I gave Linda $1,000 to spend a day until the money ran out, I would do that for the next 3 years. Every day she could go out and spend $1,000. She could buy a lot of baklava making ingredients. She could buy a lot of pickleballs. Every day for 3 years, $1,000 to spend. That'd be pretty great, right? That's $1 million. If I had $1 billion and I were to give Linda $1,000 a day to spend, we could do that every day for the next 3,000 years. That's $1 billion. But $1 trillion? If I had $1 trillion, that'd be $1,000 a day for my wife for the next 3 million years. $1,000 a day. That's $1 trillion, and our government leaders want to make several more trillion, and we already owe $29 trillion. Maybe that's a stomach turning point for America. Maybe Nineveh had gotten to the point where they knew that they had gone too far. When a guy shows up right then, and he says, God is going to destroy you in 40 days because you are wicked. Maybe the people said, we are. What could Jonah say that would turn the whole country in a direction? Something, because they turned. It can happen to cities. It can happen to countries. It can happen to churches. It can happen to individuals, too. There can come a moment where we just say, no more. Roy Weiss was driving on a highway in Missouri one day when he remembered something. Somebody had told him that there was a guard in a local prison who lived up near Versailles, where he was, and he should visit him sometime. He should stop in and talk if he's ever in the area, but he'd have to catch the guy in the evening. He's only home in the evening. And Roy Weiss drove through that area occasionally, but never at night. And even though it was the middle of the day this day, Roy said, I just thought I should go. He had prayed that morning like he prayed every morning. God, guide me this day. Give me opportunities as I travel through this day, anywhere, anyway, with anybody. Give me a chance to speak about Jesus. That's what Roy always prayed every morning. But as he turned his car up the road this afternoon, he thought, what am I doing? I'm going out of my way. I have other things to do. But he went up the road and he found the man's driveway and he pulled in and he started to walk toward the porch and he stopped. He thought, this is so odd. What am I doing here? He's not here. It's the middle of the day. He can't be here. He went up. He knocked. He waited. No one answered. He turned to go back to his car. As he walked away, the door opened. And Roy Weiss turned and saw a man standing there. And he said, I'm Roy Weiss. I'm a Christian. Someone asked me to come talk to you. That's not real clever, he said. Not pretty direct, but he was surprised that the man was there. He didn't really know what to say. And the man, who was not a Christian, said, oh, Come on in. Come on in. And he takes Roy Weiss into the living room, and he points to a chair, and on the chair is a revolver. And the man said, I was just seated on that chair with that revolver to my temple, because life for me is empty. And then I decided, why not just kneel down by this chair and ask God to send someone to help me? And the guy said to Roy Weiss, I'm so glad he sent you. And Roy Weiss said, I am too. And the man listened, and Roy told him about following Jesus, and the man was immersed for the forgiveness of his sins and the gift of the Holy Spirit. 2 months later, that man died of natural causes. But he died as an adopted son of the Almighty God, because there came a point in his life when he had been ready to listen. Maybe Nineveh was just ready to listen. It didn't seem like they were. They were violent. They were powerful. They were in charge. They had it all. But they were also ready to move towards God. You never know when someone might be. Maybe on the outside, they look like they're as far from God as you can possibly be. But on the inside, they might be totally ready to surrender to Jesus and start over. The king of Nineveh was. The people of Nineveh were. You just never know. And when Jonah told them that they had gone too far, they knew it in their hearts, and they said, we're sorry, we're sorry, we're so sorry. Which is what every person says when they finally admit the truth about themselves. Nineveh said, let's change. Let's beg God to forgive us. Maybe, just maybe, God won't kill us. Have you ever said that? Not, yeah, I know what God says, but I'm going to do what I want anyway. Not, yeah, I know I'm doing some wrong stuff, but lots of other people do too. Not, yeah, I know God doesn't like this, but I'm pretty sure he'll let this one slide. Have you ever said, for real, holy cow, what I'm doing is totally bad. I mean, really bad. There's probably no way in the world I can ever fix this. It's so bad. Have you ever said, wow, this is so far from where I know I should be. I'm done. There's no hope. If so, if you've ever said that, if you've said that recently, that's so good. When you think that there is no hope, that means there's hope. That means you might end up okay, because the only thing that God needs from you is the recognition that you need him. Jonah 3:10 says, when God saw what they did and how they turned from their evil ways, he relented, and he did not bring on them the destruction he had threatened. When they decided to change, when they turned from their evil ways, when they said, we will do differently, when they were different, God said, I will not bring the destruction. Do you hear about the two Ohio brothers who just bought two pigs? They bought two pigs, and one of the brothers said, well, how are we going to tell these pigs apart? And his brother said, I don't know. Let's cut the left ear off of your pig. Then we'll know that's your pig. So they did that. But then the pigs got into a little scuffle, and one pig bit the other pigs, and neither of them had a left ear. So the brother said, now what are we going to do? And his brother said, well, let's cut the tail off of my pig, and then we'll know that's my pig. So they did that. But then the pig with the tail got caught when the gate got closed, and neither one of them had a tail. And one of the brothers said, what? How are we going to tell our pigs apart? And the guy said, well, we could cut off one leg on one pig. And the brother said, oh, that would be mean. So the first brother thought long and hard. He goes, well, I guess we could call the white one yours and the black one mine. It's really not hard to tell who's repentful. People who change their minds then take steps in a new direction if they've really changed their minds. If you can get to the point where you say, whoa, I am really wrong, God can make you right again. And it's easy to tell who's like that. People who are like that say out loud, wow, I'm messed. People like that say out loud, I am going to stop doing what I'm doing because it is wrong. People like that say, whatever it takes, I am all in. From this point out, I am doing things God's way. What do you say? Are you like that? Let's suppose you're a student in a Bible seminary, and I'm going to give you a test today on the Old Testament prophets. And one of the questions I ask is, what is the book of Jonah mostly about? If you write on your test a fish, I will give you partial credit. There is a fish mentioned. If you write whale, I'll give you no credit because there's no whale mentioned. However, if I ask the question, what is the book of Jonah mostly about? And if you write Jonah, I will laugh and give you partial credit. He's definitely in there. But if I ask, what is the book of Jonah mostly about? And you write, it's about Jonah and a whole city changing their minds and taking steps in a different direction, I would be very impressed and give you full credit. And I would give you extra credit if you then wrote, the book of Jonah is actually about God's desperate attempt to rescue both a guy and a city that he dearly loves. The fish gets all the headlines, but the story's really about God saving Nineveh and saving Jonah and saving us, which he can do, which he will do if we will say, God, you are really right. I am really wrong. Please help me. If you will say that, he can save you. He can save your family. I bought my friend an elephant for his room. He said, thanks. I said, ooh, don't mention it. Because it's not good to talk about the elephant in the room, right? Can I? Can I talk about the elephant in the room? So God spared a country in Jonah chapter 3 because they repented. What if God sent Jonah to show up here to us, U.S.? And today, Jonah said, you people are so messed. You are so messed up. You are going to end by Thanksgiving. You're done in 6 weeks. Could America be done in 6 weeks? Could that be true? Yes, that could be true. But if you believe Jonah 3, America could still have her greatest days ever in making the world better ahead of us, U.S. If you will say, God, you're really right, I'm really wrong, please help me, he can save you. He can save your family. He can save your country. If we, like the people in Jonah 3, will change our minds, change our behavior, and change our allegiance. Let's pray.